Good morning, Tony. Good to be back. It's been a hectic summer.
It's been a while, hasn't it? But what a month to come back to. Some really, really good things going on in the sky at the moment. And of course, the visibility with the nights slowly closing in is getting a little better, isn't it?
It certainly is. The nights are pulling in, as we would say. So it's about 8 o'clock at night now, isn't it? You can really notice that we're getting some spectacular sunsets, and then of course it's getting darker sooner. So I think it is about 8 o'clock, isn't it? We start then the light we start losing that light. But gosh, I mean, haven't the sunrises been gorgeous and the sunsets absolutely gorgeous?
Some of them have. I mean, we've had a pretty spectacular year weather-wise, and for the most part, the evenings have continued very nicely with an extended amount of sunlight until we get the rain. When we get the rain, the light fades quite quickly. But for the most part this year, both mornings and evenings have been fairly special when it comes to the sun.
They haven't actually, Tony, as well. That reminds me that I think it was about 2 or 3 weeks ago. I just happened to wake up about four, half four in the morning. Lord knows why. I thought, I couldn't sleep, so I thought, well, I'm gonna pop down and make a cup of tea. And I went into the kitchen, and I just happened to glance to my right, and of course, day was almost sort of breaking. But the sky, the morning sky, was that beautiful cobalt blue color, and the planets were stunning. You had Jupiter, and then below Jupiter there was Venus, which was just dazzling in the east. And I kept looking because you had that gorgeous sort of pink tinting clouds waiting for the sun to come up. And it looked like a tiny, tiny whiff of a cloud, a sort of a curvature. And I looked and I thought, crikey, that's the moon. And it was just capturing the faintest slither on the left-hand side to a tiny, tiny thin crescent, and just above that was the planet Mercury, which you cannot always see. It's quite difficult to see Mercury. So I thought, wow, what a morning. I was obviously meant to wake up early and see it, because I wouldn't have missed that for anything. It was beautiful, beautiful.
Is that all to be seen from your kitchen window,
Yes. I could have gone outside in chimmy jammies, but I opted to stay in the kitchen.
One thing you'd have seen if you'd have been out a couple of nights ago would have been a stunning full moon in the sky. Sunday evening, there was the blood moon. Why was it called a blood moon? Because I looked at when I saw it was white.
Oh, okay. Well, that would depend on what time you saw it as well,
about 11
because
o'clock.
it was over by then. Oh, Tony, you're
Ah.
after the event.
I missed it.
It was in totality, in fact, maximum totality. So totality is, for those of your listeners who might not know, a total lunar eclipse is caused when the Earth is in a direct line between the Sun and the Moon. So they have to be on the same plane as well, so completely in alignment. And then the shadow of Earth is cast on to the surface of the Moon. So of course, the light from the Sun is still traveling, so it's traveling towards Earth. But because Earth is in the way, it has to pass through, sort of around Earth, but it passes through our atmosphere. Now, one of the reasons why, well, the reason why we have a blue sky during the day is because when sunlight hits our atmosphere, it hits the atoms and the molecules in the atmosphere, and they preferentially scatter what we call the blue light, the shorter wavelength light. So that blue light gets scattered and it leaves the red longer wavelengths to continue their journey. So that's what happens in a total lunar eclipse. You've got the sunlight coming through the atmosphere still, the blue light is scattered, it leaves the red light, which then travels onward to the surface of the moon, and it gives it that orangey red tint of a
A
colour.
spectacular sight. I mean, I've seen it before,
Certainly
but
is.
a really spectacular sight if you miss it, if you can catch it. I missed it on Sunday.
You did, because I think the maximum totality here in the UK was at 11 minutes past seven. So that was when the moon was completely in the shadow of Earth, and that's when you get that lovely dark colour. And it gets redder, of course, hence why it's called the blood moon. But it can be redder depending on what's happening with our atmosphere. So if there's an awful lot of dust in the atmosphere or pollutants, aerosols, water vapor, that can lead to a darker reflectivity on the surface of the moon. So as actually I was guesting on the BBC News channel on the Sunday evening, so covering the event live, and you know, I was saying to them how in the 19th century there was an enormous volcanic eruption on the Krakatoa.
Yeah.
And so much of the volcanic dust was in the atmosphere that at the time there was also a lunar eclipse and the moon went brown, very, very almost like dark brown so that you could hardly see it. And that, of course,
is because
dust in the atmosphere. Yep. So that affects the colour.
I have a question for you now, because this is something that came up in the programme yesterday, and it was nothing to do with the solar world and all that stuff. It was to do with the questions that 2 to 4 year olds ask, and two questions that came up were to do with the world, the solar system, and all the rest of it. And remember, these are 2 to 4 year olds. See how you answer these, because parents get to have to answer these questions. Where does the sun go at night?
Well, actually, the answer to that, Tony, is the sun stays put. It stays precisely where it is in the galaxy, and it's our planet that's going around it. And as we're orbiting, obviously, we're taking a year to go around it, so we're going around it all the time. But also, our planet, of course, is turning on its axis, so it takes 24 hours. So the sun stays put, and as we turn away from the sun, as we revolve in 24 hours, that's why we get the night time. We're effectively turning away from the sun, but the sun stays where it is. Kind of. It doesn't actually, because it's travelling through. It's actually travelling through the arm of the galaxy as well at a phenomenal speed.
Yeah.
So tricky to answer. Typical of a child to ask such an insightful question.
It's a good, great question. And
it
one
is.
That, one that most adults wouldn't have known the answer to, but I now know. So the other question was, where does the moon go during the day?
Oh, well, that's a good question as well. The moon is travelling around our planet. It takes about 27.3 days to go around us. And, of course, you know, we're moving around the sun as well. So the moon is still in its orbit travelling around us. And depending where it is in relation to the sun determines whether we can see it or not. So if the moon is between the sun and our planet, then that's when we have the new moon and we cannot see it because it's effectively lost in the glare of the sun. Mm. But then as it continues around in its orbit, we start to see parts of it, don't we, what we call the phases. So then as it travels to the opposite side, so it's opposite the sun and we're between the sun and the moon, then we get the full moon. And that's why a total lunar eclipse can only happen during a full moon, because the moon has to be on the opposite side of Earth from the sun.
Well, there you go. You see, two very good questions from 2 to 4 year olds.
From good, 2 to 4 very year olds, good.
Giving us adults a bloody nose, really, I suppose, is the only way you could describe it.
A bit of a mental exercise workout.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, they're such simple questions. And of course, they're such everyday things that we tend to take for granted. It's the wonder of what goes up on up there in the sky. And you've got them asking, where does the sun go at night? Perfectly good question. Where does the moon go in during the day? You've given answers to both of those.
Mm.
You're going to have to answer.
So, I mean, the sun is actually below the horizon as well. It's very, it's a tricky, it's an excellent question with many faceted answers.
There you go. So we've sorted that one out. Now, coming up a bit later on this month, in probably just over a week's time, the moon is going to be in action again, blocking out Venus this time.
Yes, we have an occultation, what we call a lunar occultation of Venus. So the moon is going to pass in front of Venus. Aha! Now, you think that would happen at night, but actually it's going to happen during the day.
All right.
So one wonders, you know, how on earth can you see Venus, the brightest planet, the planet that is about the same size as our planet.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very bright, of course, because it's covered in a 40-mile thick blanket of cloud, which makes it very, very reflective. The only reason why we can see the planets is because they reflect the light of our sun. But obviously, it's going to be quite hard. You think it'd be quite hard to see it in the day, but it is possible to see it in the day. So you need to locate the moon. and it's going to be a 5% lit waning crescent moon, so very, very thinly lit on the left-hand side, so you're only going to see the crescent. The time you need to be looking is on the 19th of September between noon and 20 past 2 British summer time. So, and you can see it with binoculars as well. Obviously be careful because it's only about 27 degrees away from the sun, so the sun will be quite bright, but all the same you'll be okay, but just don't go putting your binoculars in the direction of the sun. So no. find the moon, and then that thin slither that you can see, if you look to the left of that, to the lower left, before 12:48 precisely, so you really need to be looking from any time really from 12:30 onwards to locate Venus, you'll watch it disappear at precisely 12:48, and it's going to reappear at 2:07. But it's going to reappear from the dark side of the moon, you know, so the bit that's we cannot really see, because you can only see that left-hand crescent. So you'll need to be looking, it's to the upper right, 2:07, that bright white dot that appears will be the planet Venus. So the moon is passing in front of the planet Venus.
How frequent does that happen? How frequently does that actually happen?
Off the top of my head, not that frequently. I can't say precisely, Tony, I'm afraid, but not that frequently. And certainly not as frequently during the day as well. So
yeah, I figured I hadn't sort of come across that one before. But it's always fascinating how these things work and how none of it works without the sun.
Exactly. None of it does. None of it. The sun is the anchor in the what we call the gravitational well of our solar system. The sun is anchoring it together, and all the planets, of course, depend on the sun being there for many,
lifeblood
many, many
of the
reasons.
Universe, I think, is what you should call it, isn't it?
Certainly, the lifeblood of our solar system. Certainly, not the universe, because as we've said so many times, our sun is but a tiny, tiny speck.
Solar system.
Our solar system as well. Our solar system as well. Again, it's just tiny. It's lost in our Milky Way galaxy, where there's probably around 200 to 400 billion other suns out there. And they can all have planets around them.
You're into numbers and sizes of things that are just beyond human comprehension, aren't they?
Can be. Sometimes it's a bit tricky. It does make the brain ache a little bit.
I know.
Yes.
I've been to one of your talks, and you can actually highlight it very well. One day we'll get back to that one. The other thing that's happening, well, there's two things that are happening later on this month. The first of which is the ability to see Saturn at its best. You may want to explain a bit more about this one.
Yes, so Saturn is the ring planet. It's about 1.3 billion kilometres away from us. And on the 21st of September, it reaches opposition. And that means that Earth passes directly between the Sun and Saturn. So they're in a nice straight line. And that places Saturn opposite the Sun in our sky. So it makes it appear at its brightest and its largest. And it'll be sufficiently high in the sky to be visible all night long. So that is the time to see Saturn, when it's at opposition. So that's the time to get outside and get looking, isn't it?
It is, because, well, a day or so later, we get the autumnal equinox, don't we? Or the autumn equinox, as it's known, 22nd of September, 7:20 p.m. On that particular day. Hours of daylight in the northern and southern hemispheres will be roughly equal.
Equal length. Yeah. That's right, because equinox comes from the Latin meaning equal night. So this is when the Earth's axis is pointing neither towards the sun nor away from the sun. So that's why we have the day and night of equal length. And it's also the time when the centre of the sun crosses the celestial equator. That's the projection of Earth's equator into the celestial sort of circle above us. So the centre of the sun crosses out from the northern into the southern hemisphere, and of course so that marks our autumn. Autumn is beginning, and it continues until the winter solstice, which is in December, and that's when effectively, as it appears, the sun stands still and then it starts going back the other way. So yes, it's heralding autumn.
Yeah, you may want to, I don't know, I mean, can you clarify this for me? Because we hear so much on television from the weather people saying on September 1st, the season changes to become autumn. And it kind of really annoys me when you've just explained quite clearly how the autumn equinox is later on in September. Why do they make that comment?
I'm not actually sure, Tony. I just know that as far as astronomy is concerned, it's very much reliant on the celestial mechanics. And it is a precise thing. We do know precisely when the sun, the centre of the sun, is dipping across the celestial equator into the southern hemisphere. So it's what we would call, you know, certainly the astronomical equinox. I think sort of environmentally it's a bit different, and hence that's why it's earlier, but I'm not too sure why it's called that.
I was going to say, because the weather at the moment is anything but autumnal. Yes, the hours and the daylight, certainly.
I'm not sure, Tony. I don't know about that, because the thing that I always say to people, and a lot of people say the same thing to me as well, is that particularly in September, the light in September is very, very beautiful, and it's just a specific sort of soft light, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think that's very, very noticeable. And when you step out into the garden, the garden seems to know that it's autumn. It certainly responds to the autumn light, but everything seems to be a little bit upside down this year because things have moved forward. There's always been dew on the grass in the morning. Literally, I think there's only been a few days when we haven't had a dew on the grass in the morning.
Really?
Yeah. And the flowers, the roses, like the roses here, for example, they started in May and they have kept on going. And in August, I thought, well, that's it. You know, they've had their time. But now they're budding like mad again. They're blooming like mad again.
And it's not cold, you see. It's not a traditional autumn as I remember it.
No.
Yet. I'm going away later this month, so I shall find out perhaps. But funny you mentioned that, is we planted 4 tomato plants in one of our boxes in the garden. And, well, the only thing I can say, the harvest on those tomatoes has just been ridiculously good. It hasn't finished. Doesn't look like it's going to finish anytime soon. There are hundreds of tomatoes on these 4 plants. And you think, what's going on?
I don't know. It's been an amazing year for fruit, hasn't it? But yeah. I think farmers would say it's most certainly not been an amazing year for crops and hay.
Short of rain.
Yes. Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? But the fruit has gone mad, absolutely mad. We've got a blackberry bush in the garden that's gone crazy and still producing.
Now, I mean, lots of people, just before we round this off, and it is sort of slightly going off tangent slightly.
It was a bit.
the moon, it's said that the moon does have a say in our weather. Yes or no?
No, not really. No, not really.
Okay, that's solved that little
yeah,
problem.
Yeah, not really. I mean, there's a certain group of people that will say that, obviously, because the moon has a gravitational pull on Earth, and there are certain sort of gardeners that will plant crops at a particular time because of the gravitational pull and also because of the light as well. And, of course, the moon does affect, hence why it's called a harvest moon in September, because the moon is lower in the sky, it's bigger, seemingly a bit bigger, it's brighter, and we still have those sort of longer days, which enables a longer time for the farmers to be in the fields doing the harvesting. But of course, you know, harvesting has changed anyway. Most farmers now seem to be harvesting in July, August.
It's a whole different subject, but one that has some connection with the sky. Not quite sure what yet. Maybe one day we'll get to work that out. But for now, we've run out of time. Interesting one. We've had questions from 2- and 4-year-olds. We've got answers for grown-ups. And we now know when the autumn equinox is. Jane Green, for now, thank you for talking to us.
A pleasure as always, Tony. Thank you.